What are you doing? I'll tell you what you're doing. You're listening to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Either you are, or I'll be skipping rope with your entrails. Ta-ta.
This podcast is brought to you by our patrons at patreon.com/Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play. Welcome to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, the podcast where we explore the amazing universe of the Elder Scrolls. Adventurers, welcome back to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. This is your host, Tom, or Robots. I'm here with my other host, Lotus. Lotus of Doom. Lotus,
hey,
welcome back, man. How's it going?
I'm good. We got Necrom on console this week, and I've not had enough time to play, so I'm jonesing to get back to it. I can quit anytime I want. I just don't want to quit.
Yeah, that's how that goes. Well, welcome, everybody. Welcome, chat. Thank you for being here. We are digging into more magic-y stuff because last week we talked about the Sijix, and the Sijix are connected in certain ways to the other group of mages that we are more familiar with, the Mages Guild, and we haven't done an episode on them yet, and they're actually connected to another kind of minor location that'll probably come up in this episode. So we're going through magic-y stuff, which totally makes sense with all of the cool stuff coming to ESO, or at least which has come to ESO with the Necrom expansion and the Arcanist and all of this other weird kind of Hermaeus Mora magic-y stuff going on. So
yeah, some weird tie-ins outside just the normal Mages Guild stuff, ironically hitting literally right now.
Yeah, right now for everybody. So we're going to dig into a little bit more about magic. I think this is kind of fun for me, Lotus, because I've been digging back into some of the... We both enjoy the mysteries of Elder Scrolls and the things that they kind of tell you a little bit about, but then you speculate a little bit about it. And yeah, the Mages Guild is kind of in there a little bit. They're kind of the most mainline version of, say, groups of, you know, mages, people who use magic. And over the ages of the world, the different eras, they've been more or less accepted in, you know, unlike certain other groups among, say, the Empire or these different cities and places. So
yeah, and you know, even acceptance aside, that, you know, they've kind of changed how they interact with you or each other or anything else going forward through the time span of the series.
Right. So we talked last week about the Sijix and how the Sijix were doing like this old style of magic, this more mysticism guided focus with whatever the old gods were, or at least a broader pantheon of understanding who the gods and beings of this world are. And then that was kind of narrowed down by the Altmer. And then we end up into the second era, and here I'm gonna let's role play a little bit here, Lotus. You are Vanis Galarian. You are a mage. You are a high elf. You have been part of the Sijix. You
feel like more pretentious by the minute. This is great.
In fact, you probably were pretty pretentious. You were a very powerful mage, and you knew who Manny Marco was. And he was always kind of a douche and kind of evil, but before he went like super evil, you went through that whole situation with him, him taking that knowledge and using it for very nefarious means. And it is now the second era, and 230 years into the second era ish. And you've seen what all of this forbidden knowledge has done. You've seen that there are a bunch of different groups of types of mages practicing different kinds of magic. And then you also have seen that in general, the organizations, the political organizations, the Empire haven't necessarily been too happy with mages because they're, you know, they're a little nefarious. They're a little secretive.
Yeah.
What do you do? Yeah. What do you're Vanis Galarian and you're like, we got to do something about this. What do you decide to do?
Maybe, I don't know, maybe we kind of like turn it into like some type of schooling system and we make it moderately available to the masses.
Okay, so you form the Mages Guild. You open it up. Basically, you say, hey, anybody who wants to do magic, come join our guild. We'll help educate you. But then do you just let them do whatever kind of magic they want?
You know, we'll since we're doing it like a school, we should probably govern exactly which things that people are allowed to learn. And, you know, Manimarco kind of being Manimarco and us no longer being on the up and up like we were prior to, I think maybe stuff like necromancy should be outlawed. maybe rein in exactly what people can learn. And we definitely won't get too carried away as time goes on and restrict magical abilities, you know, past the point of reasonable extremes at any point.
Right.
We'll totally not get corrupt in that regard.
Right. So that sounds like a good plan. I'm sure that'll work 100% of the time.
Yeah, no, that's probably what happens throughout the series, too.
But it makes sense. Like, having to do with necromantic magics.
Yeah, that's straight out.
They're a violation.
Aside, that one's straight out.
Yeah, they're a violation of the corpses of dead people and the things people care about, and they're kind of out there. What do you say, Mr. Vanis Galarian, about soul gems then? How do you feel about soul gems?
You know, I think that lesser creatures really are totally fine. We can work with conjuration. We can stuff them in all the soul gems we want. But, you know, dealing with black soul gems is probably another no-go for us.
Putting humans, you know, and elves.
Maybe jamming other people competition from your class in a soul gem is not going to be looked too kindly on.
Okay. So we have some limitations here. That's what you're saying.
Some boundaries. I think some limitations. Again, you know, I really feel like I should just be the authority on what is allowed going forward for a while.
Okay. All right. Well, it's interesting because Vanis lives a very long time. Manimarco, extremely long. I mean, he's basically a lich at one point. So,
yeah,
there's that. But here, let's get into that was actually a very good answer. Thank you, Vanis Galarian, for joining us. So here, let's dig into what the UESP article says. Words are hard.
Nailed it.
Nailing it. So yeah, you are right. That's exactly what he did. Now here's the details. In the second era, the Mages Guild was founded by Vanis Galarian in about the second era, 230, as a way of centralizing magic and thus moving away from many separate groups like the Tzidjic Order, of which Galarian was a member, that had dominated the study of magic until that time. In fact, the Tzidjic Order had already been falling out of grace with the society. Its policy of isolationism led to mistrust, and its religion, best described as a type of ancestor worship, was an increasingly unfashionable philosophy by the second era. That's basically what we were talking about, right? You end up with this dilemma. This group is not really accepted because they're not following the rest of society, and they're very secretive, so they're kind of on the out. With the formation of the Mages Guild, Galarian spread knowledge of the magic arts to the layman, selling magical items, potions, and scrolls to the general populace. As such, magic was no longer restricted to the aristocracy and or intelligentsia. Galarian named the office of High Guildmaster the Archmage, however you want to pronounce that, in memory of Shalador, the first recorded mage to claim the title. You've probably heard of Shalador before if you played, I don't know, any of the games. That name comes up a lot.
Pretty much any of them.
So so basically, he takes a situation and goes, okay, everyone's scared of magic and it's too removed from society. Let's bring people together around the idea that, like, magic can be safe if we educate it in a certain way, if we make it socially acceptable, and if we allow lay people to understand a little bit about what we're doing, to buy potions or scrolls, you know, to kind of spread the magic love out in the world a little bit.
Yeah, and by doing so, I mean, that's applicable to so many things. When you teach people how to use something responsibly so that it's not this just scary, like, I don't know what to do with this, and then you're kind of just jabbing at it, and the potential for screwing up is so much higher, you won't have that because it won't seem weird. It will be something that people are kind of accustomed to dealing with. So it's not going to just be freaking people out all the time if you can throw lightning bolts or whatever. So in theory, this totally makes sense, especially with trying to this should be able to, you know, technology is somewhat limited throughout the series. Mm-hmm. Whereas this is almost their form of technology. You know what I mean? Like, they don't have cell phones, but then, you know, they have portals. It's like, okay, that seems pretty handy. I mean, yeah, having that ability to kind of use that as their form of advancement makes sense, because the more people have access to that, the more that they're able to do, for better or worse, sometimes.
Right, right. It's like technology in our own world. If only certain people have certain technology, then that seems kind of secretive and magical and gives them a one up on everyone else. But if we all share knowledge and technology and it's all accessible to everybody, then kind of levels the playing field and makes it less scary. So this all went off without a hitch, right? Well, not exactly. During the second era, there obviously were some leaders from some different groups who seemed to be upset with this idea. And they were like, well, this is a bad idea. And so, of course, they call Vannis Galarian to come and explain what he's doing. And either Vannis was very good at convincing all of them, or very good at lying about and like downplaying the dangers of magic, or he also got the help from one of the leaders of this time period, who is Rillus the 12th, who's one of these nobles and important people. And Rillus ends up, and this is Kinlord Rillus, who decides to stand up for Valerian's point and pushes through basically the idea that like the Mages Guild should be allowed and it is now vetted and okay. Turns out that Rillus, total dark mage in the making, and was interested in the kinds of advancements that Rillus could get from the knowledge in order to do other terrible things. So
again, with knowledge, you know, you got to have a degree of responsibility that goes along with that, which that becomes very, very specific to the type of people you're dealing with, which is really hard when you're trying to make something accessible. That does mean that although many people will use it for good, other people will probably use it for their own selfish needs or whatever.
Yeah. Now, speaking about use for good or for evil, the Mages Guild is founded and it proliferates in the Somerset Isles at first and eventually makes its way out into the continent as other places open up their own Mages Guilds. And eventually it was incorporated into the capital of the Empire. And so you have this kind of transition phase of the Mages Guild moving focus to the Empire and the, you know, the being associated with the Emperor and all of the stuff coming from the center of Tamriel in order to kind of give them a little bit more leverage over those things. And then you have events that happen in ESO. We're not going to go over a ton of those things, but you've got the Soul Burst, you've got all this other stuff going on in ESO. And guess what they needed in order to help push back Molag Bal and all of the terribleness? Well, they needed people who were good fighters. They needed people who knew how to handle magic, and they decided to send a bunch of them over to Cold Harbor in order to fight back against Molag Bal. So Mages Guild pays off by the fifth century, by the end, mid to end of the, well, I guess it'd be sixth century of the second era, because now you have a bunch of trained mages who can actually stand up against all of the terribleness that was happening. So
right, and there you know, go. Having battle mages becomes like integral to so many different factions throughout the history of all of the games. Like it becomes to a degree the norm, like to have them as like, you know, trained scholars. And it honestly, like viewing it as a school, it's kind of interesting because you get both the side effects of that, where it comes with a degree of status to a lot of mages. Like it's you know, it's like, okay, you know, you've essentially got your degree in magic when you go to these schools, which is kind of interesting because in some of the games, which ironically later in the series of the timeline but earlier in the series numerically, like Arena and Daggerfall, the Mages Guild definitely come across as, you know, it was still early in the series formation. They actually, since the Psijics really hadn't become fleshed out in the series, we had mentioned that they, you know, there was kind of restricted to Skyrim and
Yeah, they show up in ESO, the text, but we didn't really get a whole a view of them until Skyrim.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So with the original formation of the Mages Guild in those earlier games, a lot of time, you kind of got a lot more influence of they kind of have the traits of both of them. Because when you accept quests for the Mages Guild, which I've actually been doing in my playthrough in Daggerfall, they treat you like total pond scum for quite a while.
Right. Until you gotta earn your way up.
Exactly. And they're very, it's kind of funny. They definitely come across as these like eccentric, oftentimes like total, just like, oh, I'm lost in my own thought because of all these things. And it's like, well, what did I tell you to do again? Or yeah, that's fine. Figure it out. You know, I can't be bothered with these trivial problems when I have these more elaborate problems. And it's funny because they definitely had a more mixed feel in the older games. But then as they advanced in the series, it definitely seemed like it had a little more acceptance of like, okay, they got the split going. So it was like, okay, well, yes, the idea to them is, you know, a little more accepting to the general population, at least most of the time, I think.
Yeah. Now, and Rob the Princess makes a good point in chat. Because of the bringing together of certain magic, types of magic, into the Mages Guild, that also created a situation where they outlawed other ones, or the other types of magics just didn't get taught, didn't get spread, didn't get shared.
If you're not teaching them, they kind of become lost, to his point.
Like, right. Kind of like a language, right? Like if you define a certain language as the primary language of a culture, then eventually the other indigenous languages or other, you know, minority variations on those languages eventually kind of go away. They fade into the background.
Yeah.
So things like, and Rob points out, shadow magic, reach magic, ancient Iliad rituals. We've gone over a number. I mean, the stuff the Psijiks knew. There's a bunch of stuff out there that we see. Druidic magic. We get a lot of that stuff in the series. All of those things kind of fall outside the Mages Guild.
And to jump off that and go into more of my domain of like the gameplay mechanics in general, it's kind of funny because for gameplay reasons, they've also changed the way schools are distributed. You know, one game you'll have mysticism, but in another game you might not. Like the way they're classified changes based on what game you're playing, which is kind of interesting because the schools become this sort of nebulous thing of like what type of magic goes in what school, because it can be different from game to game.
Yeah, it gets redefined. So like the meta perspective is that they redefine it depending on how they want gameplay to work out in the games.
Exactly.
But the narrative inside the world is that the Mages Guild lasts for centuries and centuries and centuries. Sometimes they just reorganize in different ways or whatever.
And the biggest one, obviously, being like with the Levitation Act, which is funny because it was, you know, designed for logistical reasons of programming.
Are we talking about in Morrowind? And Morrowind to Oblivion?
Morrowind to Oblivion. From that point on, the Levitation Act was passed where you literally can't use levitation anymore. Like that spell needed to be taken out of the games because the way that you would load into cities was entirely different.
Right. It breaks the games.
And
similar
all
to
these game issues.
Like
so they made it part of the lore.
Right.
They literally was like, no more levitation. That can't be doing that.
Right. Similar to like having flying mounts in like World of Warcraft or something. Like they have to design the zones so that it works for flying mounts, but then also the quest lines change, like it makes questing so much easier if you just drop into the place you're supposed to go and you don't have to like fight your way through the path because you had to walk.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so that plays out differently. So we move into like the third era, and now we have battle mages, which you mentioned, who are now integral to the Empire and their methods and all of that.
Yep,
you
often
have
trained in the battle spire. Womp womp.
There you go. Right. You have the reemergence of Manimarco, the reemergence of restrictions on necromancy, the fact that some of the guild members turn to start worshiping Sanguine, which is interesting. But it just shows that over time, like these are groups of people. The guild works fundamentally different as time moves on, society changes, and different kinds of people make different decisions. So you've got a lot of that stuff that goes on, and that's, you know, in some of the games. And then we have the fourth era during the Oblivion Crisis, and then after, which leads into the fourth era. And the Mages Guild was dissolved due to strong anti-magic sentiment after the Oblivion Crisis. So that's why in Skyrim, we have the College of Winterhold, and that's where you find all the magic-y stuff, but there's no Mage's Guild.
Right. And that's kind of where it becomes, I guess when you want to look at it, like in the most rudimentary way I can think of, it's like, okay, well, since the overall like network of like them is no longer a thing, so you could say that their accreditation is gone. you now just have this community college essentially that you're going to, where it's just like, yeah, well, we're kind of doing our own thing. We're out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, barely hanging on the edge of the continent.
Literally hanging on by a thread, like on a cliff edge.
Yeah,
like,
right.
And that's like, you know, where you're going to study. And at that point, it's weird because like even still, that college is sort of feared again. Like you get an era that people are uneasy around them because it's regressed. Like it's like, okay, like it's not becoming the norm. And now people are starting to become cautious of what they might not know or understand again.
Right, right. So that's the historical extent of it. The organizational structure is interesting too, because it's led by an archmage. And there's a council of mages made up of six archmagisters or archmagisters, one of whom is the archmage. And by the third era, the archmage and the council of mages were headquartered in the Arcane University in the Imperial City. And the council decided important guild policies, such as its policy to use necromancy or not use necromancy. It administered recruitment, sales of spells at guild halls, enforcement of guild law, and the rules of guilds varied from location to location. This part of the variance that we were talking about. Some differences were more drastic than others. In addition, guild halls existed in most cities in Tamriel, each of which was run by a local guild magister, alternatively known as a hall magister. So you've got kind of these different rankings, right? And then below him were the master of, here we go, funny words, incunabula, alternatively called the high incunabulist, and the master of arms. The master of incunabula had a council of two, the master of academia and the master of the scry. Scrying is a thing you could do in ESO, right?
Right.
The master of arms also had a council, the master of initiates, and the palatinus, the leader of the local chapter of the Order of the Lamp. The Order of the Lamp were they were kind of the militarized part of the group that protected the Mage's Guild. So you had kind of this hierarchy and all of these different levels and organization that set up the structures and all the different guild halls. So that's kind of how it all worked. You kind of, if you did this long enough, you would work yourself into a certain position, then you have a role in the guild, and then you might move up to the position above that, and eventually you might become Archmage. So that's the structure. That's how it works. And of course, everything went super swell all the time, and nobody was ever mad at the guild or
banished them from the continent. Yeah, they definitely disbanded because they were just so tired of being successful. That was the reason.
But, you know, when the world gets attacked by Daedric Prince that opens portals all over the place, and you start becoming a little bit more scared about magic because the guy down the street can also summon Daedra to do his lawn.
Right. So. And actually, one thing that is kind of a good point to just make a note of that Rob brought up, the viewpoints actually would likely differ a bit too, depending upon where exactly you are discussing this stuff. Again, some regions, you know, what with Altmer specifically, they're much more naturally in tuned with Magicka, so it's probably like, since it's integrated so much more in their culture, even when, you know, you have the Mage's Guild disbanding or something like that, or whatever the case, it's probably still likely more common to find an acceptance of Magicka.
Yeah. Well, look at the Thalmor.
In those regions. Exactly. Yeah, like, with the Thalmor. Exactly.
Like the Thalmor are all, like most of those, like you fight them, you come across them in Skyrim and they start throwing fireballs at you. Like it totally makes sense. Like, but those mages of the Thalmor are probably not part of the Mage's Guild, because the Mage's Guild was dissolved, and the Thalmor probably don't want to divide their interests between a guild and managing their own rules and structure
I was going to say the Thelmor wanting to take any instruction from anyone except themselves is highly unlikely.
Right, right. And I think that to another point, it fell out of favor with the Empire. So the Empire in general, the culture of the Empire is like no more Mages Guild. But that doesn't mean that like somewhere like I don't know, High Rock, where again, magic is a little bit more common among the populace, that they still aren't doing magic, but the organization itself probably still doesn't exist.
It's not this centralized body that it used to be.
Right, right. So there's all of that. All right. Well, that's kind of the history and the organization. We're going to take a break and thank our patrons. And when we get back, we're going to talk about some of the types of magic that are generally approved of and how they seem to be defined usually. And then, of course, which ones are kind of on the out, which the list isn't very long, but we're going to go over that when we get back. All right. Don't go anywhere. See you on the other side.
It's that time. Holiday shopping is here, and I've got something to help you out. Uncommon Goods takes the stress out of gifting with thousands of unique, high-quality finds you won't see anywhere else. And that's legit. How many different stores can you find exactly the same products and you just are shopping for whoever has the best deal? No, this is a place that has high-quality, unique, often handmade or made in the US products by independent artists and small businesses that truly create one-of-a-kind gifts for all sorts of different seasons, and it's the holiday season. Well, get this. I found one that I thought was super cool. Now, my wife loves puzzles. She loves mysteries. She loves escape rooms. They have murder mystery jigsaw puzzles where you use the puzzle to solve the mystery. There's a few of these, and I think I might pick up the clairvoyant convention one. I think she'll love it. And that's just one example. They've got gifts for moms and teens, book lovers, history buffs, diehard football fans, foodies, mixologists, gardeners. There's something here for everybody on your gift list. And they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice with every purchase. They've donated more than $3.1 million to date. So don't wait. Cross those names off your list before the rush. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/scrollslore. That's uncommongoods.com/scrollslore for 15% off. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
This is Hamish Morak, Dragonborn, and you are educating yourself to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast.
All right, here we are. This is the part of the show where we get to thank our patrons, including, we've got a bunch of new ones, Juan, Ghost Armor X, Raven, Stigmas Septimus, upgraded to a tier 4 patron, so they can join us on the patron chat coming up next week. Then we have Cody D and Bryson S. Welcome to the Patreon, everybody. Thank you for joining us. And shout outs to our Daedric Princes, Jacob K., Kira C., and Noodle Al Dente. And thank you to all 129 of our current patrons. We couldn't do this without you, so thank you for being here and supporting the show. If we're helping you get through your work week, if we're making your commute better, if we're, maybe you have an infant and you like to listen to us while you rock the baby to sleep. I don't know where that that's version.
I feel
of
like my voice is from. Not prone to helping with any of that.
Then thank you for being here. And if you want to join us for the patron chat next week, all of that stuff is available at patreon.com/ElderScrollsLorecast. You can help us out and get ad-free episodes or join us next week. We normally record this on Thursday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern. We will be doing the same thing next week. And let's see, it's the 22nd today, so that means the 29th.
I can't believe we're already at the end of June.
I know, time goes by. And so if you want to join us, feel free to join up on there. Connect your Patreon account to Discord, and then it will open up the channel in Discord where we all discuss what things we're going to discuss. We discuss before we do the discussion on the actual recorded episode. So lots of fun stuff you can join us with there. And hope you decide to go check it out. Also, Lotus, we got a new review in. This one is from The Blind Orc in the United States. I'm not sure how they type if they're blind, but maybe they have
with
don't
with,
you aren't there keyboards
braille screen
aren't there braille keyboards isn't that a thing
I have no probably
I think I maybe mean, there would, are Yeah, that's a thing, right?
Yeah, all
right,
so I would assume so.
The blind orc using a braille keyboard wrote, "One of the best ES podcasts ever. 5 stars. It's just such a good podcast to listen to, whether you are at work, curious about the lore, or even just want some inspiration to create a new character. Not only is the podcast itself just great, the community is probably, in my experience, one of the most friendly out there. I've had so many times where I ask a simple question and end up getting a full-fledged informational conversation and debate that feels like it could be a podcast on its own. Our listeners are like super engaged with this stuff, which is awesome.
I love that.
And then it goes on and says, not to mention that the host himself, Tom, is completely active in the community and will often add to these debates. It's a great thing. Lotus does too, by the way. It's a great
Elder Scrolls. Less so, because I don't check Discord as much.
Yeah, it depends on how busy I am when things pop up. I'm like, quick answer.
Since I don't have a desk job, I don't actually have, it's whenever I can look at my phone. So
right.
A lot of times I get to just read everything. I'm like, oh, look at all the stuff.
Oh, look at everybody else having all these conversations at their desk jobs. it's a great Elder Scrolls resource, and I would completely, all in caps, recommend listening. P.S. completely deserves being in the top 1% of podcasts. So, well, thank you very much. Yeah, that is one of the stats. Kind. We've been in the top 1% for like, I don't know, 2 years now or something like that. So very, very kind of you. Thank you for taking the time to do that. And if you decide that you would like to leave us an Apple Podcast review and give us 5 stars, we'll read it out on a future show. You don't have to listen on Apple Podcasts. You just have to have an account and then log in and leave the review. So that's totally another way to help us out. Also, you can rate us on Spotify or whatever other podcatcher you're listening to us on. So that's what we've got for the mid-show break. Let's move on with the rest of the show.
You're listening to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, dear child of Sithis. That is why the Night Mother loves you.
All right, so Lotus, are you ready for this? I'm going to read through some of the things that get taught and their definition.
I was going to say, are we going into some schools of magicka here?
Yeah, so this article, this part of the article on the UESP about the Mages Guild is particularly interesting because it goes into its teachings. It says here, many of the greatest mages graduated from the Mages Guild. This was partly due to the guild's prominence in Tamriel and open-ended recruitment policy. The Mages Guild encouraged all mages of varying skill and interest to join and promoted an active regimen of practicing one's chosen spells to gain mastery over their specific school of magic, right? So it implies that a lot of mages like focused in on certain schools more than others.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, the Mages Guild taught its students to use magic in various ways, from conjuration to elemental daedra to alchemy to dark magic, which was taught at times. After several centuries, this aggregation of magical research and knowledge became haphazard and disorganized, and a new model based on the Shad Astula Academy's curricula was proposed by Gabriel Bunnell around the time of the Three Banners War. While the specific schools changed over the centuries, 7 major schools of spellcasting and 2 other schools of arcane arts were taught extensively by the Mages Guild, providing students with a better structure to learn the concept of wizardry in half the time of the old curricula. It sounds like a marketing speech about like...
That literally sounds like you're, you know, why you're trying to market that people should come to your school.
Right. Come to the Mages Guild. We'll teach you all the good stuff.
And none of the really bad stuff.
Yeah.
But maybe still the bad stuff.
Yeah.
So, all right. So we have alteration. And I've got dogs barking. Alteration spells alter the physical and magical properties of the target, making objects heavier or lighter, granting elemental or physical shields, bestowing the ability to breathe under and walk on water, and open locks.
Pretty handy.
Pretty straightforward, right?
Yeah, pretty straightforward.
Now, levitation would probably be thrown out under this one. Like, is that an alteration spell? I think that some of these feel like there's a little bit of crossover.
There's definitely some overlap, and it's why a lot of times it seems like they kind of jump from school to school.
Like, right. And so maybe levitation, maybe you can make yourself lighter, but I don't know that you'd make yourself lighter than air. I feel like there's better ways to levitate than that method.
Right.
So here, let's move on. Conjuration spells call upon otherworldly entities, like conjuring the Daedra, that kind of thing. Through telepathy, and certain skilled conjuration mages can develop telepathic links with each other. Conjuration spells augment the caster by granting them Daedric and undead guardians, Daedric weapons and armor, and the ability to repel the undead. You can see how conjuration sometimes, and we've talked about this before, borders on necromancy.
Yeah, it's like right on the cut. Again, it's where do you draw the distinction for this? It definitely seems like one of the gray schools.
Yeah, like conjuring like ghost chicken to protect you on your quest. That's not so terrible. Conjuring your long dead brother to get vengeance on his killer. It's a little bit more sketchy.
A little more suspect.
All right, destruction magic, which sounds wholesome. These spells harm the target by damaging its health with either elemental or magical attacks, draining and damaging its attributes, skills, health, magic, and fatigue, making it weaker to the elements, poisons, and magic, and corroding its armor and weapons. So basically anything that breaks something down.
Yes.
So not a whole lot to say about that. That's fireballs right. and lightning and all that kind of stuff. Illusion. Nobody in the United States says illusion, but I will.
Illusion. No, we're gonna allow it.
Spells affect light and a sentient target's mind. They can harm the target by commanding, demoralizing, paralyzing, silencing, and causing it to frenzy, or augmenting it by rallying, charming, calming it, granting it invisibility, night vision, translucency, and illuminating it.
Yeah.
So
you like, yeah, I mean, at least in terms of like causing frenzy or demoralizing, it's like using, you know, Twitter to have a debate or something like that. That would be a form of illusion.
Right. Do you ever, okay, so a few thoughts here. Do you use the spells that like send enemies into frenzy when you play like Skyrim? Because I don't. I've tried doing it. I just never really.
Some of my friends do. I've seen some of my friends do it before, and it seems like a really cool play style. But I am a very straightforward play style, so I tend not to. Mm-hmm. The only thing with illusion that I always do get a lot of use for is I don't like carrying torches. Yeah. So I always tend to use illusion to see. I use the light version of it where I manipulate that.
You get the little light that floats around you.
Yeah. Recently in Daggerfall, it literally makes a candle that just floats in front of your screen and it just says your character's name on the candle because it's your summon.
That's funny. That's funny.
Yeah. But like, that's more of what I use it for. However, a lot of times illusion seems like you can do some cool stuff with it. Especially if you're into conjuration, you can essentially conjure stuff and then frenzy people that then you have essentially more minions under your control because then they'll go attack your enemies theoretically, or you can cause people to chill out or whatnot. So it's definitely got some interesting play styles to it, none of which tend to be really something I use an awful lot, though.
Right. So I also think that there's some really cool distinction here between alteration and illusion. Alteration is changing the thing itself. Right. So if you wanted to say, you know, maybe you got a glass ball and you want to make the glass ball shine light, that would be alteration because you're altering the way the glass ball affects light, right? Illusion affects the mind.
Yeah, so, you think that ball is producing light,
right?
But it's not actually.
Right. So like maybe I want to convince everybody that this ball is shining light, but I'm not an alteration mage, but I can cast an illusion spell that convinces everybody's brains that that thing's casting light.
Correct.
So it might as well be casting light, at least to the people who are witnessing.
Exactly, because what they're seeing looks like that. So it's interesting. It's overlap, but in a different way of overlap in what you can do with it, but done in different ways.
Right. And it's basically mind magic. So it's just one of those distinctions that you don't think about very often, but that's actually what that is. Right. Then we have mysticism. This is one that shows up in some of the games.
This one's a little more bizarre.
Yeah. It's an obscure school, though its spells seem to manipulate magicka itself. With spells that bind the target's soul, this school is closely related to necromancy. Spells can augment the target by granting it the ability to detect life, reflect damage, absorb and reflect spells, or harm it by dispelling its magical effects and trapping its soul. Spells can also move objects through space with telekinesis. The nature of the school of mysticism is subject to much scholarly debate. So this one seems like one of those, it definitely treads a bunch of lines.
Yeah.
Like some of these abilities seem like they should be in other schools, but I have to wonder, mysticism being something that, say, the Sidgics tapped into, that I wonder if mysticism actually is fundamentally a different type. It's not a school of magic. It's a different type of magic itself. And I'm right. making that distinction between, like, let's say alteration, destruction, illusion, conjuration, a lot of the ones we've talked about, they all use like ethereal power, like the power that comes from Aetherius, right? Through like the sun, like that source of magical. Let's call that traditional magicka. I feel like those kinds of things are traditional spells because they use traditional magicka in order to cast. And although effectively in some of the games you use magicka to use mysticism spells as well, it's almost like there's a different source of a core source to either the method of creating the magic or the source of power for the magic that make it distinct and different, kind of like shadow magic or like that power is bestowed from somewhere else, if that makes sense. That's the right. I mean, it's just a feel. I don't have, this is not core lore, this is just
it's a feeling I have. It's sort of, and I can see that, because like the other thing is, again, this one, like we mentioned, obscure is a good way of putting this, because sometimes it's things that are put into mysticism become parts of other skill lines,
right.
like other schools in different games, because mysticism is not in all the games.
Right.
There's a little bit of manipulation going on with that. And one of the ones that is super useful in regards to, like, I guess, like moving the object, like you itself, like your soul is part of it. One of the things that is super useful for mysticism, as was mentioned, when you're manipulating the mark and recall as a spell, mm-hmm. where you literally are able to teleport your being around, like, oh, I'm marked here. Well, I'm over here now. I want to go back. So you literally are like, whoop, and they're like back. It's like that's moving you physically, like, and your being back to a previous location, which is, again, kind of weird, as opposed to like, this is, you know, this light glows. It's like, okay, well, this is literally moving your person right. and existence around the world.
It feels like a different, like, level of magic.
Right.
It's a different class in itself. Yep. So we've got mysticism. Then we've got restoration, which grants the target, augments the target by restoring its health, attributes, stamina, and magicka, fortifying its health, attributes, skills, stamina, and magicka, granting its resistances to elements, magic, disease, paralysis, poison, and unenchanted weapons, curing it of disease, poison, and paralysis, or harm the target by absorbing its health, magicka, stamina, attributes, and skills. So basically, it's almost like if you really, really look at the detail of what's happening here, restoration is about funneling energy from one place to another, or blocking the transmission of energy.
Yeah.
So, like, my health is low.
I'm going to heal this up.
I'm taking magic energy and filling up my health with it. So I'm now channeling that energy into health. Right. I'm channeling that energy into stamina. Or I'm
my
now
arm
creating.
Fell off. I need to starfish my arm back on. So it's
right. Or I'm channeling that energy in order to block things that would be harmful to my health, like poison or something like that.
Right.
So it's basically manipulating energy as either filling what's not there, or, you know, fixing what's not there, or blocking the harm from something else, or draining something else. So, like, for example, curing an undead creature would be removing the undeadness from it.
Right.
So you got kind of that sort of thing going on too. Then we have thaumaturgy, which is a wonderful word. This does not change the appearance or structure of an object or force, but can manipulate laws temporarily. This allows thaumaturges to perform acts which can be achieved through brute force in other schools of magic, such as levitation, etherealness, detection, pacification, water walking, teleportation, summoning, and the manipulation of other magical forces.
So, again, another one that's not prominent every game. And these oftentimes get put into other categories, be they alteration, mysticism, stuff like that. They kind of, this school in the older games was a little more prominent, but then kind of got condensed into some other schools
right.
with the spells.
The core concept here is that it manipulates laws temporarily. So, for example, like maybe you could make somebody levitate by making them, I don't know, light enough to float on air, right?
Sure.
That would be alteration. Or maybe you temporarily suspend gravity around them. And now they levitate.
And then now it's thaumaturgy.
That's the law of gravity, which has been suspended by thaumaturgy rather than alteration.
So same effect, different way of going about it. Again, like we had mentioned otherwise, where it's sometimes the schools, you can obtain the same effect oftentimes through different means.
Right. Just like in the real world, like we
absolutely
people are constantly. I mean, if you are coding right now, if you're somebody who codes any websites or video games or whatever, there are multiple ways to get the same result through different methods. So same kind of thing, right?
Yeah. I mean, and that's kind of almost like the way the games have long been. To get to your end point of whatever you're trying to do, oftentimes there's a lot of ways to do it. There isn't just like this is the only build you can use to succeed at this. It's just like, here's an open world. Just get there. And many options.
It's like the beauty of the series. It's the beauty of everything everything Bethesda's
Bethesda. It's just so
main development
open
does.
Yeah. With so many options to get to your end result.
Yeah, Starfield's going to be the same way, which I'm super excited about. Which, by the way, posted a new article. We got a new interview with Todd and a bunch of new information. Starfield Insider, if you want to go read it on a website. Starfield Lorecast, if you want to listen to it. A bunch of cool new info about how this kind of stuff is going to happen in Starfield. So, and not necessarily magic, but like the way that the world works and being able to go through your goal, go to your goal in multiple ways, right? Like all that kind of stuff. All right. So then two more. Alchemy is the act of mixing, boiling, and distilling various substances to obtain their chemo-magical properties and create potions and poisons. So this is the equivalent of chemistry in the world of Elder Scrolls.
It's objectively chemistry, and it's just called alchemy, which is a parallel to the real world. A lot of times it was called alchemy. And
traditionally, alchemy was about trying to turn things into gold.
The idea was kind of to make a profit off it, but which I guess you could argue chemistry sort of does. Well, whatever.
Sure. And then there's enchanting. Enchanting is the act of endowing objects with magical properties through the use of a soul, almost always with the use of a soul gem. The effects of enchanted apparel may augment the wearer, and the effects of enchanted weapons may harm the target. So, so now we're getting into what powers this magic. And again, like this is different. Like enchanting is powered by soul magic. The like restoration is empowered by magicka.
Like, right.
Those are not the two same energy sources. They're different.
No, and it's where things get a little dicey when it comes into what we'll be talking about in a minute, when what you're not supposed to be using, because it's specifically no. But then in regards to oftentimes you need to have conjuration in order to soul trap the items you need in order to then use the souls for enchanting. So they kind of go hand in hand that way. So again, sometimes these, you know, almost rely on each other to accomplish what they need to be done.
Right. Now, there are a number of different magics that will not get, we aren't just going to go back over here because they just are ignored by the guild.
Right? Yeah.
Like a druidic magic and Reachmen the Thum or sword singing or hedge magic. Like all of these are different types of magic, but they're not included in the Mages Guild. Often for different reasons. Some of them are more dangerous. Some of them are more specific to certain cultures that weren't there when the Mages Guild was founded and weren't necessarily part of the Empire.
And for the most part, they're not overtly like, no, you absolutely can't do this. It's just, we're not going to teach this. And, you know, it's just not on our radar.
It doesn't feel like it's part of the culture of the mainline mages. It feels like these are subcultures. And so, of course, if you're, you know, highly educated mage, you're a little bit snooty, you're going to be like, hedge magic. Why would we teach that? You know, like,
sure, those are savages. It's like, okay, well, maybe it's just a different way of doing something. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. Right. So Aside from those, there's of course the two that when we were playing at the beginning, there's necromancy, which most of the time is not included in the mage's guild.
Yeah, that's going to be a hard no for the most part.
For the most part.
Necromancy is largely just super frowned on. And then, you know, you combine necromancy with, you know, the dark arts, if we were joking about black soul gems, as opposed to any other soul gem type of thing.
Well, soul gems pose a big problem, because one of the things that's common in Elder Scrolls is that soul gems are easy to make. They're all over the place. They're harder to fill, but they're easier to make. So if you fill a soul gem using conjuration, and let's say you're a farmer and your pig dies, and you go, well, we don't want the pig to go to waste, so we're gonna eat the pig.
We're gonna eat the pig, trap its soul for eternity, and
we're gonna make some other things out of the pig parts that are useful. We'll use the bones, we'll use the skin, like anybody in most of human history would have done, because most of us would have been farmers. You're gonna use everything that's available in some way. Well, the other part of the pig that's available to people in Tamriel is the pig's soul, and so you're gonna trap it in a soul gem, or you'll go to the mage's guild, you'll have one of the mages come out, trap it in a soul gem for you for a certain amount of money. Yeah. And now you've got a little battery that you can use to do whatever you wanted to do that needs soul magic in order to power it.
Which is really screwed up when you think about it. Bringing Oinky to the, you know, mage's guild and then turning him into a battery for your, like I said, I don't know, your Dwemer lawnmower or whatever. It's like, okay, maybe let Oinky just rest.
Right. So over time, most people were okay with this because it's a pig or whatever. But some mages were, you know, the percentage of people in our own world that go, I'm not going to eat meat anymore because I don't like what that does to animals.
Sure.
We're probably going to have problems with white soul magic, right?
Yeah.
But there are people who are okay with that. The majority tend to be okay because the trade-off is so beneficial to society, this ability to use this magic to power stuff. But then come the black soul gems and the idea that you can, you know, trap another person.
Yeah. My neighbor's an asshole, so he is now going to power my TV.
And you can see why this is a lot more of a problem, because basically you are condemning somebody's soul to a form of hell trapped within a gem. And that becomes a problem. In some cultures, it was more common to say, like, oh, beast folk aren't really people, so we can use their souls.
Right.
But isn't the fact that all beast folk souls are black souls, just like humans or elves?
Yeah.
Isn't that proof that they're people?
Isn't that literally showing that they're the same quality of soul when you're doing the checking in on hierarchy of soul quality? It's like you objectively are in the same grouping.
Right. It doesn't matter if you put Larry down the street in the soul gem, or if you put, you know, I can't think of a good Khajiit name, or Argonian, licks his paws or whatever over here and put that, like, they're the same. Hisses their souls soul work the same way. So that becomes a problem, and of course they outlaw those. And so next time you're playing a game and you're like, oh cool, black soul gems, these are really powerful, think about whose mom is in there.
Well, also, so the ironic thing, just from a gameplay standpoint, it is pretty amusing that a black soul gem has like it's basically just grand quality. So it's the equivalent of just a grand soul gem. So it is kind of funny that it's just like, this one's just specific to, like, yeah, okay, you get squished into this one where you wouldn't get squished into a standard grand soul gem, but the quality of the soul is technically the same in game.
Right. So yeah, there's some fuzzy edges on the stuff, but so this is cool because there's a document called Guild Memo on Soul Trapping by Vanis Galarian. And we're going to wrap up this episode with this. From Vanis Galarian, Archmagister Emeritus. If you pay attention to the popular fads and fashions of spellcasting in your guild halls, you have doubtless noticed the recent resurge of interest in the discipline of soul trapping. Unlike most of the passing fancies that come and go among the magical fraternity, I consider this particular vogue alarming and dangerous. There are reasons why soul trapping has never been a part of the core curriculum of the Mages Guild. Taught to only the most experienced and dependable wizards, and then only for certain specific uses. First of all, it is technically a subset of necromancy, and on that basis alone, it should be abhorred. Except, as mentioned, for certain special cases, and then only under controlled conditions. Second, it is a magical technology that practically invites abuse, especially when employed to trap the souls of sentient mortals. It is the sort of arcane practice that the public fears most and is likely to result in local bans on the organized teaching of magic. And if that happens, all our work in establishing the guild will have been in vain. The fact that soul trapping is now common knowledge among Tamriel's magery, to the point where so-called mystics sell soul gems of various sizes in every market and bazaar, is a problem that can be laid squarely the feet of the iniquitous Manimarco and his Order of the Black Worm. It is all part of his program to make necromancy seem commonplace and almost harmless. In some parts of Tamriel, notably Cyrodiil, the vile practice of necromancy has even become accepted as a valid and legally tolerated magical discipline, while our old mentor, Aichesis, would have to say about this pernicious development, I hate to think. But what are we to do about it? I have been given the matter some hard thought in between rooting out cells of the ever-burgeoning worm cult, and I think, at this point, the only way to gain control over soul trapping is to co-opt the practice. Therefore, I propose the Mage's Guild codify and systematize the various soul trapping magics into a common grimoire of a few reliable spells, and then teach our members that these, and only these, are the legal and authorized methods for soul trapping. Furthermore, I propose that for the purposes of soul trapping, we categorize all souls into two classes, the legal or white souls, those smaller essences that are captured from beasts and animals, and illegal or black souls, which are derived from sentient mortals. And we will teach only those spells that can capture white souls, forbidding our students to use the larger soul gems on sentients. It will take several generations and the suppression of the worm cult for this dichotomy to become the pan-Tamrielic standard for soul trapping. But if the Mage's Guild can't take the long view on the good of Tamriel, who can? This is so good because it shows the connection to necromancy. It shows that like Manimarca was trying to leverage popular appeal for something that was so beneficial to make them more okay with necromancy socially. All of that is so cool. Lotus is just like nodding his head. He's like, yep.
It's funny because it's kind of brought up in chat too. It's all very, very political to push forward which agenda, essentially in this case, Manimarco is really like, okay, necromancy is my like field of interest, but nobody else really wants this to be okay. How can I make this so that everybody thinks, hey, no, look, it's not so bad. Like, I really just want to study this. Let me study this. I totally won't abuse all of this power.
Right. Well, we'll just give everybody, you know, Dwemer lawnmowers with soul gems to power them. They'll get used to the idea.
Yeah. Easy peasy.
So that's the origin of the Mage's Guild and some of the other details about what they've been teaching and kind of their structure and stuff. Any other thoughts before we head out?
No, actually, that was good. We kind of got to cover all the different things, which I liked, because that one with the Mage's Guild, it allowed us to cover a lot of the things like schools of magic and stuff like that. That's, you know, so prevalent throughout the games. And as opposed to doing a thing on just like schools of magic, it ties in so much to this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what kind of is determined by an organization like the Mage's Guild that, you know, is the quote unquote governing body when it comes to schools of magicka a lot of time.
Right. And it also shows why so many other types of magic we come across are not widely understood or taught about, is because they're just not included in the Mage's Guild.
Yeah.
So it leaves a lot of opportunity for writing out storylines that play into other things and more mysterious parts of magic and all of that. So that's fun too. But that's it for this week. Thank you for being here, everybody. We'll be back next week with our patron chat. So if you'd like to join us, there's still time to sign up on the Patreon. And Lotus, you got anything else you want to share before we head out?
No, not really. I've just been excited to play Necrom. We'll be doing another episode of Tales for anybody who likes the other show that we do that's kind of discussing like the news and stuff like that about any of the games, but you know, the live service game of Elder Scrolls Online tends to be the biggest topic. It's just been I just wish I had more game time, because so far I am really, really loving Necrom now that it's on console.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, I need to play through the storyline. And one of the things I've been debating is streaming it if I can, if I've got time to do that. But then yep. also, if I'm going to be recording that, turning that into kind of episodes again, like I did a while back.
Yeah.
You know, like turning that into maybe audio or video. Let me know if you guys are still interested in that sort of thing. I'd love to know, because it takes a certain amount of work to produce it. So I don't want to put a lot of work into something that most people would be like, I'll skip those episodes. So if you're interested in that, if that sounds like something you'd like to either watch on YouTube, watch the streams on Twitch, or listen to the audio version, please let me know, because I want to give you guys what you want. And if you don't want it, then I'll focus my efforts somewhere else. So. Sure. Awesome. Also, all the shows that we do, robotsradio.net is a wonderful place to go look for them. I mentioned the Starfield Lorecast. Lots of cool news coming about that like every day almost. So go check out that. The most recent three episodes have a whole bunch of really cool new info. And that is now we're trying to do those weekly. So lots of cool stuff over there. And thank you for being here, everybody. We will see you next week when we're chatting with our patrons. And until then, stay safe out there. Bye, everybody.
See you later.
Thanks for joining us. We'd love to hear from you. You can reach me on Twitter at robots_radio or Lotus of Doom at Lotus of Doom. Also, you can join us on the Robots Radio Discord channel. You can easily just search Robots Radio Discord on Google or check the description underneath the podcast. Also, this podcast is recorded live every week on Thursday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific on the Robots Radio channels on Twitch, YouTube, and on Facebook. So just search Robots Radio on any of those platforms. Come join us. We'd love to chat with you while we record the show, or before or after. Either way, just come hang out with us. And if you're looking for more information about my shows and the shows on the Robots Radio Network, go to robotsradio.net for all the information about all the shows on the network, including the Robots Radio Rocket Club, where I help both new and existing podcasters to grow their shows, build their audiences, and create the best podcast they possibly can. All of that at robotsradio.net. We'll see you next time.